Welcome back to Gold Ribbon Conversations, the podcast created to support families fighting childhood cancer in Ireland. 6 children, adolescents and young adults are diagnosed with cancer every week in Ireland. And the Gold Ribbon, which illuminates precious light, love, courage and compassion, is a symbol of strength and solidarity for each and every one. My name is Sinead O'Moore, and it is my privilege to bring you this podcast on behalf of Childhood Cancer Ireland, a charity founded by and led by parents of children with cancer and survivors who know that one of the greatest sources of strength for this fight is conversation. Throughout this podcast, I talk to families impacted by childhood cancer, as well as the experts who care for our children's health, education and happiness. Yes, we talk about the fear and the pain, but we also talk about the hope and the friendship and the community that exists here, because you are not alone. Childhood Cancer Ireland values every single donation while on its mission to help more children, adolescents and young adults survive cancer and thrive as adults, and support all those dealing with the long-term effects of illness and trauma. Joining me today is Aoife Maughan. Aoife was diagnosed with a rare spinal cancer when she was 13 in the summer of first year. She was very active and sporty. It was very much part of her identity, sociable, a great student, and underprepared for how life-changing this diagnosis was. 6 spinal surgeries and cancer treatment later, Aoife is in her 30s and survived childhood cancer, but experiences long-term effects, including chronic pain, reliance on high-dose painkillers, loss of power in her leg, and even a paralyzed vocal cord. Nobody ever spoke to her about late effects and what to watch out for. Now, she advocates for other survivors, for joined-up thinking, access to care, and late effects clinics, sharing medical records, a multidisciplinary team, often even just to get answers. This episode celebrates fighting cancer, but it also acknowledges that people expect you to be your old self. You expect you to be your old self. But survivorship means so much more than that. Aoife, you are so welcome to the Gold Ribbon Conversations podcast. I've been really looking forward to this one. I take something from every single episode and every single guest that joins me. But I think that there is something really powerful with talking to a survivor of childhood cancer, not just parents that are going through it, but it was you, it was your body, it was your story. And now as an adult, being able to listen and to learn and to hear you share the reflection on what you went through and what you continue to live with.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here and to be able to share what I've been through, I suppose, over the last many years now, it feels like.
How many years
has it been? It's 25 years now, yeah. So it's been kind of a professional patient now, I like to joke, but sometimes it does feel that way. I was 13 when I was diagnosed. I'm 38 now. So yeah, it's been a while.
13 is a particularly important year.
Yeah, it's a very formative year, I suppose. I was just finished first year in school, so just started secondary school. And you're just on that cusp, you know, you're just starting your teenage years. And it's so formative anyway, you know, you're already going through puberty, you're just starting off that. And I was going through cancer and going through puberty at the same time is definitely against the kind of natural order of things. So I was going through cancer at any time is against the natural order of things, really. And it was particularly challenging, I think, like to go through those two things simultaneously. And even just the challenges of having to go through the changes in your body, the changes, all those things. And then even leaving school, I was a nerd, loved school, having to kind of dip out. I was out for 2 years. And then the challenges of kind of having to re-enter that world as a new me, the new Aoife, and having to deal with the kind of new normal that I was dealing with then. I was really sporty before I got sick. Two parents that were PE teachers. My sister's a PE teacher now. Sport dominated my life. But I was diagnosed with a spinal astrocytoma. So my life just looked very different. I could no longer run or do anything like that. So I can walk and all that. But running, jumping was kind of off the cards. So I kind of had to reinvent what I was. So all those things coupled with being a teenage girl was quite difficult.
At 13, did you understand the diagnosis? Did you understand? Did you even, you know, when somebody
it's said... funny. It's great. I kept a diary, and looking back on the diary, I don't know if I really did. Yes, I knew it was something bad, and I knew it meant that I was, you know, sick and to a degree that was serious, but I don't think I could quite grasp the gravity of it. I remember my dad was the one that told me. He brought me out for a walk, and I remember he quickly then afterwards told me about Canteen. And I remember just being really excited, like, oh, great, I can join a club. Like, you know, this sounds great. Like that. And immediately the kind of thought of this kind of peer support, which just shows how beneficial and how important that is. Just the thoughts of being able to join the club just really sounded so exciting to me that it instantly allowed me to be in this gang. So I think that kind of sums up the question there of, did I really get the gravity of it? I don't think if that's what I was focusing on, I probably didn't. And even in my diary entries, and I think this is important to kind of sum up as well, how this kind of demographic of, or this cohort of patients need to be treated kind of differently and given such special attention. In my diary entries, I kind of speak about, oh, I got told I was, like, have cancer. But then in the same diary entry, I'm kind of speaking about a boy I really like. So I think, you know, it's really important to remember that there's the kind of, these patients are still teenagers as well, and not to just treat them as patients. You know, I think it's really important to remember that the kind of the teenager in them never, that doesn't just disappear. They need to be treated and remembered. It needs to be remembered that they are, that's element of them is still there. And I think that's sometimes forgotten throughout that journey as well. I think that's a really important thing to remember throughout that kind of whole experience. I think that's sometimes forgotten. But yeah, no, I don't think the gravity of it until I experienced, though. I think the experience that you go through, that's what yeah, makes it kind of really hit home.
And 25 years ago, what was that experience like in terms of what treatment was required and what?
I had a massive surgery to try and remove the tumor. The tumor was wrapped around my spinal cord. Unfortunately, due to that, they weren't able to remove it all. So I had to have 8 weeks of radiotherapy. The type of tumor it is, it can actually change from slow growing to fast growing. So that was a big risk when it's attacked, kind of. I was in hospital for about 2 months after the first one. Got home, and after 2 weeks, I knew that there was something wrong. My legs weren't really working properly, so back in, and there had been, you know, something had gone wrong. They thought actually it had grown again, but thankfully it hadn't. So they had to go back in and resect some more. Just a while later, maybe actually just about a year later, I had to go back in and have more surgery. All those surgeries kind of led to me having quite a bad kind of, I suppose a bad term would be a hunchback, but that's the best way for people to kind of visualize what it was. And again, teenage girl going into school with that, I had to wear a big brace and everything. And I was very lucky that my school was great. My friends were amazing. But it was quite difficult, like body image wise, and that I actually think I got away quite easily with that. Looking back, I think I was lucky in the time that I was growing up in, you know, social media and things like that weren't around. I think I really escaped quite like I'm very glad that that wasn't around when I was growing up. But I then had to have when I was 16, I had to have my first spinal fusion. And in order to straighten my back, and that was the first of six. So that went on over the course of about 10 years. I had continuing spinal fusions. So I did eventually. I had to leave school in and out, but I did get to go to college and that. So, but again, my education has been very fractured. Which I'd say a lot of people experience going through this, and that can be very difficult.
Childhood Cancer Ireland doesn't receive any government funding and relies entirely on your support and that of our corporate partners to continue to grow our work in order to reach and help more families impacted by childhood, adolescent and young adult cancer. Will you join us on a challenge this year? Whether it's running the Women's Mini Marathon, abseiling from Croke Park Stadium, or walking the Camino, we have something for everyone. Find out more about how you can help make a difference at childhoodcancer.ie.
How much pain were you in throughout all of those surgeries?
A lot of pain. Yeah. I think that was one of the first things that really, really shocked me. I can remember being told about my first surgery, and you know, I suppose harking back to that ability not really being able to comprehend what was ahead of me, and so I was maybe focusing on the wrong thing. I can remember my mom and dad being brought in, because it took a year for me to be able to be diagnosed. I mean, my parents were bringing me to everyone. Nobody, I was told I had growing pains, I was told I had everything, but you know, we had to fight like for a diagnosis. And eventually when we were told I had to be brought in for surgery, it was a big deal then, of course. But I was brought in to get stuff for hospital, and I got a disc mat as a surprise. So this was like a big deal. So this is what I was focused on, was my disc mat. I remember when I was being told about the details of the surgery, I don't think I could even concentrate on it. So I don't think I really comprehended what was going to happen when I woke up for surgery, because I can remember thinking, how am I going to walk to the bathroom? And I mean, walk. I could barely walk for, I'd say, 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And I can remember just waking up and thinking, I'd never experienced, or even, I don't think I could have even contemplated how bad that a pain like that was. It was very tough, yeah. And yeah, pain has kind of been a constant companion in my life ever since, to varying degrees, thankfully, though, throughout. And it has been, it is thankfully not always been as, I suppose, like sometimes it's like a little furry puppy, other times like a big, big black dog barking at me, or like it has a very firm grip on my ankle. That is how I would kind of describe pain.
Pain, and of course, where the, like how important your spine is to how the rest of your body is supported and moves at a time in your life when you're also growing
so much
and the world should be opening up to you so much. Were there times in the last 25 years where you have felt anger and resentment and frustration as to what it has done physically?
It's funny, I've thought a lot about this. My degree is in psychology, and I did, when I spoke about a fractured education, I've done a few years of my master's in psychotherapy, so I've thought a lot about these things. And I don't think I got angry enough, actually. I think I pushed a lot of that down in order to just move forward or push through. I've never been that angry a person, but I think it's quite healthy to be angry about those things. And I think I always maintained the role of the good patient and, you know, the good girl and kind of things like that. And I always wanted to be minimizing. I suppose I think I'd say a lot of patients find this, you take on, I thought I always felt quite a lot of guilt being a sick, the sick person. Now my family are amazing. Like I couldn't ask for a better support network in my family and friends. But I, as a person, will always take on that wanting to make it okay. And even though I knew I wasn't responsible for being sick, I still wanted to make the experience to see how much it was affecting everyone else, even though my parents never showed anything, still never have. They were always like steadfast and like never, just like rocks always for me. But you know, I could see, you know, I had two sisters, younger sisters at home. I had two, you know, I just felt such guilt that they weren't getting anything from my parents. So I think I just didn't kind of access that. But definitely I had to mourn the loss. Maybe I was more kind of sad than, you kind of had to mourn the loss of being able to play basketball or run or so being upset at that. And definitely there were like days where I'd be annoyed that I couldn't do this or couldn't do that. But I did push myself a lot. I would have felt maybe a step or two behind friends at like getting a degree or getting this or being able to travel. Or so I would push and push until I could do something similar. But I think it's healthy to be angry and healthy to work through those things.
The role of survivorship.
Yeah.
We've come a long way in 25 years, but perhaps not far enough.
Yeah. Oh, we've come on in leaps and bounds. We really have. It's amazing. Even if, I always say the simplest of things, even just the medical world and the experience of being a patient. Even, you know, when I had my first surgery, major, major spinal surgery, I had an electric bed. You would think most people having spinal surgeries would have an electric bed because moving was horrific. But now it's just a given you would have one, but I would only ever have one in intensive care. So even just the world of being a patient and just the world of medicine has come on in leaps and bounds. But for survivorship, I mean, that word wasn't around 25 years ago. The word of late effects, anything like that, that I heard about that through Patricia, the amazing Patricia McGaughan, and not from a medical professional. And I have loads of late effects as a result of my treatment. I just thought they were unique to me. It was kind of me being wonky, nothing in relation really to any of my treatments. I had never heard the word until I kind of got into the world of survivorship. And even since I've gotten involved in the whole world of advocacy and survivorship in the last 8 years, it has really progressed. And it's amazing to see so many people become engaged, become passionate, so passionate about it, and use their lived experience in order to progress further. It's great. It's so empowering. I think it's brilliant.
What more do you feel could be done, especially in terms of helping survivorship and those, you know, those after effects, and being able to have a more considered and collected treatment plan?
Oh, Sinead, how long do we have? I had a meeting yesterday with a doctor. I have begun to lose the power in my left leg. It's just been really, really difficult to get answers or to find someone to help. And he asked me, you know, who's in your corner? Who do you go to now? And I almost got upset when he said that, because the answer was, I don't know. And I don't know who to turn to. He's the doctor I was speaking to as a family friend. He was speaking to me in that, you know, in his own time. And I was just like, I don't know where to turn with this. I'm floundering and I'm lost within, like, the sea of
between
the medical world.
It's like you fall between two stools, because you're no longer part of the childhood cancer world.
Exactly.
You weren't an adult cancer.
Yeah. So often in that, I suppose, that transition between pediatric and adult, that's a massive void that can happen with people. That's something that's definitely improved. I know when it happened with me, I just felt like I was pushed out of a nest and just left to try and fly, and desperately felt like I plummeted to the ground. Because when you're in Crumlin, you're there and you're in this kind of cocoon. It's so nice. You're seeing your doctors all together. And then when you go out into the adult world, you're seeing doctors all over the place. There's notes everywhere. Nobody's sharing things. It is crazy. But yesterday, the appointment or the chat that I had with this doctor summed up so many things that I feel are lacking. Now, I want to preface this by saying we are so lucky in Ireland. We have so many amazing medical professionals and we do so many things well. Like things in Crumlin, like the care in Crumlin is amazing. And there's very few people that will, I don't think of any, I've never heard people that will say, oh God, yeah, like John's was awful. I had a terrible experience there. You know, I mean, it's just amazing and they do amazing work. But I think the breakdown happens in this transition period. And when people even kind of lose that status of, you know, a cancer patient. And unfortunately, I think it's like 75% of people, when they transition out of having that label or, you know, they're in remission, they do have late effects as a result of their treatment. And that's not to scare people. Some of these are very mild and, you know, can be dealt with. But people, I suppose, you know, education and is key, and this is something people need to know about. And when I had this appointment yesterday, when I was chatting to this doctor, it was just kind of summing up this so many of these issues, where I had no point of no person, no centralized point of call. If I had this kind of person that I could go to with a holistic way of kind of looking at things, maybe, or somebody that was I was able to call on and say, like, where do I go, maybe what's wrong. He then asked about my notes, and he's like, you need to get your notes together. And my notes, I've had to request from multiple different hospitals. They've come in massive boxes. I mean, for me to sort through them all is really difficult. I've had to chase so many things down. Things are lost. I wasn't able to get them from some hospitals. It's been a mess. So even things like that. It's very difficult to try and advocate for yourself continually like that. So I think there was so many things there that, you know, if you were able to have just something like that. I was very lucky as an ambassador. I'm on this ambassador program for the EU as an advocate, and we were very lucky to go on these peer visits visiting other hospitals that have certain aspects that would be things that we would really like to implement. So we got to go to Utrecht, just outside Amsterdam, hospital there, and they had a late effects clinic there, and it was amazing. And it's like something that you would just absolutely love here. To be able to go in at any age, like after you kind of age out of the system. But once you have had cancer as a child or adolescent, you can go there and just say, look, this is something I'm concerned about, this is something I need to address, and they will direct you where you need to go. Then we went to Vienna, and they had things like a case manager, where again, this is somebody that you could ring and they would direct you wherever. They would check on you, like, do you need, you know, how do you need to get here? Do you need transport to get there? They also had a school integration teacher, which I thought was amazing. Someone that will go to the school, talk to teachers, help everyone integrate. I could talk all day about things that I think would be needed
Like, not to minimize them, but they sound like really obvious.
I mean, yes. Because so many, and so many then the social, psychosocial issues then that crop up are multiple. I mean, the psychological kind of side of things, which to me seem very obvious, that, you know, if people have gone through what many people have, like what everyone has gone through, if you've gone through this journey. I think a lot of the times when people kind of, when they are in remission, is when they kind of need that support, because they've been in a fight for so long that they haven't had time to deal with the psychological side of things or their emotions, because they're in a fight for their life, or they're in a fight, you know. So it's when everything dies down that those feelings start to come up for them, and then they're just left just flailing about with no support. And that is when we need to have support, be it with peer support, with education support, and we need to help people, because in order for them to be, you know, because these are people that can be brilliant members of society, going back to work, going back to education, and they just, again, are left kind of fighting for these things. And it can just be really difficult and really frustrating.
What do you think could be done really achievably, like right now, just to make a world of difference?
Well, I think, I know that psycho-oncology, I know that there has been a lot more people put in place for that. So I think that's great. I'd say that will be rolled out. There's the fertility pathway has been put in place. So at least people can be tested now. That's now been put in place. So if you've had treatment, you will be able to go and be tested to see your fertility, you know, your fertility, and because that is a big, obviously a big issue for many people after treatment. But I think just things like the, and like it, somebody for education in order to help people reintegrate into jobs or education, I think that could be something quite simple. I feel that would really benefit people. Something like that, like a reintegration officer or something along those lines. And really looking at the late effects clinic and something centralized, I think, because I think it will streamline everything for both the medical professionals and the patients. So that would be, something I would love to happen. But who knows? Hopefully down the line that's where what we're looking at. Hopefully in the new hospital as well, there's going to be, and like I know in the new hospital, there will be better facilities, like say for adolescents and all that, things like that. So fingers crossed, a late effects clinic will be coming.
What late effects are you personally dealing with?
Well, other than my leg, I've now been diagnosed with a meningioma, which is a benign tumour on my spine, which is as a result of the radiotherapy. As you can hear my nice husky voice, which is particularly husky today, that is a paralysed vocal cord, which is a very odd one, again, from radiotherapy. I got that. All these are like very delayed ones. And pain, unfortunately, pain is really beginning to impact big time. I'm on a massive amount of medications, and I mean, a shocking amount. When I tell any doctor, they're always like, kind of look at that don't know me, kind of look at me like, surely not, that couldn't be, that couldn't be what you're on. I told my friend who's an ICU nurse the meant I was on, and she said she wouldn't give it to half of what I'm on to most patients she's on, which shocked me and scared me actually a little, to be honest, that my tolerance is now that high. I've been on OxyContin for a long time. I've changed that. I've been on methadone, which I didn't even know was a thing, other than the use that we're used to hearing it for. And it's, yeah, it's shocking sometimes when I think of the amount of medications I've had to take. And I don't like to think of maybe the long-term effects, but it's something that I do need day to day. But now with my leg getting worse, I'm falling more. I've had some bad falls. I've already had an A&E visit this year. I've had two hospital visits this year, you know, and I don't want my world to get smaller. So I'm really fighting that. I don't want my independence to, you know, I don't want to give up any of that, but and I still want to be able to do what I like to do. But I am fighting, I'm just fighting a lot and fighting against my body. And it can be hard when your mind and your body are in a constant battle with each other. I've been in that battle, I feel, for 25 years. Sometimes it's so much, it's a lot easier than others. But it can just be really tiring. And sometimes it's just like, oh God, okay, couldn't I just, today now, I'm done. I don't want that to be happening today. I want to have a good day. I don't want the pain. Or it's like when I go on holidays, sometimes for some reason, at 25 years in, I will still be like, oh, I kind of thought that my pain wouldn't come at me now. But because, unfortunately, no, you feel your pain does come with you when you're on holidays. But yeah. So it can be difficult.
How has it impacted your emotional and mental well-being?
Obviously, I have my bad days, as everyone does. But when I look back on the way I was when I was first sick, I think in a way, being that young helped me because I was probably a bit ignorant and naive. If it was now, the consequences of everything, I probably would have been more aware. And the gravity of it. But I suppose I was a bit oblivious back then, so it was easier to just get my head down and get through it. You kind of I tend to go into just a kind of mode in my head that is just like, right, I'm gonna do this. But emotionally, I think I'm very lucky with the support I have. And I've always been able to kind of talk things out. But it, of course, there's days where I'm just, especially if I'm really sore or if I haven't, you know, my sleep has been really bad, that you're just like, oh God, like this is just now like relentless. And I just would really like a break or especially at the moment when I was feeling so lost as to what step to take next and feeling like I had no one in my corner. I didn't know who to turn to. I didn't know where to go. And as well, the fact that my leg has, there's no answers. You know, there's no, I was hoping that my tumor, that the new tumor was the reason, and they'd say, oh, you know, great, we'll just do surgery. We'll take that out and your leg will be better, you know, instead of when they're saying, sorry, your spinal cord's just completely wrecked from all your surgeries. We don't know what's wrong and it's just deteriorating. We don't know why. You know, when there's no answers, it's almost worse, you know. You kind of want them to find something not that bad, but just an answer. That's when you're, when you know that there's something wrong. So it's, that can be difficult.
I think it's really important to have this shared more widely, because there can be this illusion that the, you know, the moment of ringing a bell, you know, in the moment that cancer is beaten, that, and of course there is for some an opportunity to return to a normal, well, thriving life, but for others, the cost of saving that life, and for you, has been 25 years of your body being in distress, real distress, because of what it had to go through to stay alive.
Yeah, it definitely, now I'm saying that I've had a great life. Like, you know, I've got to go to college, I've got to travel, I've got to, you know, just have great relationships, have, like, I've such great friends. You know, I have had a great life. And as in, like, that's over. As in, you know, I do have a great life. But it's definitely been marred by, you know, it has been difficult in that way. And it's definitely changing now. I'm not happy at the moment with how it's going. It is worrying with my leg, and the fact that there's no answers, and the fact that it's deteriorating and I can't get an answer as to, is it just going to get continually worse? Why is it getting continually worse? Am I just going to lose the power in it completely? And the doctors are just saying, yeah, maybe, you know, and it's just, that can be infuriating, because you're just like, oh, please, somebody just give me an answer. Am I going to lose the power? Am I going to, you know, be able to walk? Am I going to keep falling? Because if I fall, most of my spine is fused. So I only have 4 working vertebrae. So if I fall, my fusion can burst, my spine can fracture quite easily. So falls for me are quite serious. And now even visually seeing myself, this is probably a vanity thing as well. Like I look, you know, I've had 3 people have stopped me on my walks to say, what's wrong with your leg? So I know. And even just things like that have been upsetting. Like just knowing that I just visually look different now, just more than I did. I find that upsetting.
You're at a point again where it's like, no, I'm supposed to still be expanding my horizons and my life and my career path and where I'm mad and where I'm growing and what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And like this unanswered chaos.
Yeah.
Instead of having a team that may not be able to actually change the course of action that's happening in your body, but at least would be a scaffolding for you.
Yeah.
So that you're not sitting in the question all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And like when you say there, like, you know, the growth and the, you know, it's, I've always felt those few steps behind my friends, but when these things happen, it feels like I fall further and further behind, you know. And even though they're societal markers, it's still difficult, I feel, because even though you shouldn't really mark yourself by them, I feel like it's difficult not to. So as I was younger, it was easier to catch up, you know. I was behind in school, caught up, behind in college, caught up, but then life was, it was harder to catch up, you know. And it was like people were getting married or buying kids or having, you know, buying houses and things, and you know, I wouldn't be able to get a mortgage, or I wouldn't get, you know, things like that. That's a big psychosocial thing. So people not being able to get mortgages is a big thing. People not being able to, you know, fertility wise, things like that. That's a massive thing for people. There's so many people that, this isn't relation to me, but I know this is a big thing for people, just in relation to survivorship, that, you know, decisions were made for them And rightly so, because imagine for parents, I can totally understand this. People say, you know, oh, your child is, you know, going to die if they don't need or don't get this treatment. It has to happen straight away. So a decision is made for them and they have to have treatment, but then their fertility is affected down the line. But they didn't make that decision. So even though, of course, it was the right decision at the time, it's still hard to grapple with later on, you know. And even if there were or people who were told, maybe not even told when they were 16, that this decision was being made. I mean, that's a big thing. I think people not communicating with adolescents or even children, I think conversations need to be had with patients, no matter what the age. Yes, to varying degrees, but I think it's kind of people forget the understanding that kids and teenagers have of their bodies, of what's going on, because they need that autonomy, they need that control. I think it's so important to be able to have that ownership of decisions of your body. And you can just say, they have the right then to say, yeah, no, I prefer not to know. But I think they need to have, just because even then down the line, they don't think, God, I didn't have any idea about that. Or I think it is important to have those conversations, those difficult but important decisions, because those things are very difficult down the line. I think when it comes up again, that, oh God, you know, now I can't have kids, or now I can't have, and it might rear its head only, you know, when they start wanting to, maybe in their 30s.
Yeah. And I suppose the whole point is we're trying to save a life so that they have a life to live. Yeah,
so exactly. So it's totally understandable.
But to have a life to live,
yeah,
in the best form, to advancements in treatment to minimize after effects.
Yeah.
But a support system around those that are experiencing after effects.
Yeah.
Where that they can be grateful to still be alive, mm-hmm. but also supported with whatever physical, emotional, mental stress that their body is still experiencing mm-hmm. as when their life continues and changes.
Yeah.
You can't be just pushed out of the nest, as you said.
Yeah.
And expected somehow to fly.
Yeah.
There is a gap in the system.
Yeah.
And what is the, you know, we place so much on that race to survive,
mm-hmm.
but let's also help people live and live well on the other side of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that whole holistic approach. People need to, you need to help these people become functioning, healthy members of society again, and which they have so much to offer. So in whatever capacity that is and what they want. So instead of just being like, oh great, okay, no cancer anymore, off you go, it's just to try and support them in whatever that may be, and not just them but their family, their support network, because they play such a vital role in that, and they've also been impacted by this. I think that's so important. And they will play such a role in building that person up, in helping that person, and help the medical community as well, because they, you know, they won't then have to do as much if they want to look at, you know, I often think of looking at these things, if, you know, the powers that be look at the bottom line, if that's all they were looking at, you know, if they help the kind of social, the families and all that, you know, these people will be the support network as well, and they will help. There'll be less visits to the doctor. There'll be, all these things are so important. And I think, you know, of course people are going to have, maybe like, well then, I think anyone will benefit from seeing a therapist or seeing, you know, things always going to be a good thing, but especially if you've gone through something like that. And I think then if you have the supports and going back to what you want, or trying to figure that out, even, because it can be so difficult at any time trying to figure that out, and just trying to work through stuff that might be coming up at any time, and like that in relation maybe to the fertility thing or the maybe loss of being able to say, like I spoke about sport, just trying to mourn the loss of the old version of you maybe, and then bringing in the new version of you, or figuring out what that is, because it is a new version. The old version of you is gone, and people often expect the person that's gone through this, they expect the survivor to be like, oh well, you're grand now, you're going to be back to normal, and nobody is back to their old self. And that's not always a bad thing. Like, you could be, that's like, you know, you've gone through something, yes, probably really traumatic and everything, but the other side with some really, you know, amazing resilience, some unbelievable life lessons, and ready to fight anything that comes your way. That's the one benefit from going through it early in life. I mean, anything that comes your way later on, you're well able to fight your way through it and take it on. Nothing seems a problem. You know, you just know that you're going to be able to take on the world after that.
Thank you so much for your advocacy, for what you're doing.
I'm happy to do that. That's something I don't think I'll ever stop doing. It's something I love to do. And yeah, there's Team Ireland. If anyone wants to come on board, we have Team Ireland, which is a group that, if people want to look it up on the CCI website. And so it's just a group of people that we can just share information with, and just be able to share what's going on in the kind of advocacy world, because there is so much going on. EU KayasNet is another kind of group that's the European body, but it's a social network that's kind of a social platform that's interactive, and it's really great for, like, it's kind of the EU, under the EU umbrella of Beat Cancer, which is hoping to kind of have this interactive social network that is run by European survivors. So if people want to look up that as well, but it's really good.
Thank you so much for your time today.
No problem. Thanks very much, Jade.
I'll leave links to those on the show notes as well.
That's so great.
Who is interested can find that directly. Throughout it all, you've been through so much, and you continue to be. But I am grateful to know that you are still finding strength and energy in your voice to do this advocacy work. It's so important. And anybody else who has gone through a similar experience, who finds the strength and wants to join that, I think can really help those that are coming behind. We can't make change if everybody allows things to just stay the same. There's a better way of doing everything. And that usually can only happen when people start collecting and raising their voices together. I've really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much.
Me too. Thanks, Richard.
Thank you for listening to this Gold Ribbon Conversation. There are more Gold Ribbon stories written by those fighting childhood cancer on our website, childhoodcancer.ie, and you'll find a link in our show notes. If you can, we would love you to share this podcast across social media using hashtag Gold Ribbon Conversations, as it can help more families to discover this show. This podcast was produced by The Brand Story for Childhood Cancer Ireland, hosted by Sinead O'Moore, and sound production by Alan Breslin.